You ready to do this thing?
Of course.
Okay, so welcome back to the Token CEO podcast. Today is Monday, October 19th. We have a special guest today. So Coley Nick is going to be doing the interviewing. He's our new editor-in-chief. He's going to be doing the honors. He's actually one of the oldest, or he's an old school Barstool guy. He's taking on a new job officially as of last week. So we're going to hear from Coley, and he promises me we're going to talk about he wants to talk about cereal is what he told me. So we're going to be talking about cereal. So if you're still listening to this, this episode is presented by Macy's. So as everybody knows, we are rounding out Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And before Coley and I get into our conversation, let's give a quick shout out to Macy's. So Macy's is working really hard to reduce disparities in cancer care. They have a massive initiative going on right now to round up your purchase on Macy's. So you could do it in-store or online at Macy's.com. And they are giving all of that change to Ralph Lauren's Pink Pony Foundation. So this is a new breast cancer initiative from Macy's. If you go to Macy's.com/pink, you can get more information. But the net of it is that if you buy something on Macy's, you round up your change, they will give the balance to the Ralph Lauren Pink Pony Foundation, of which the proceeds go to breast cancer. And the Pink Pony Foundation is focused on reducing disparities in cancer care and increasing quality treatment for everyone battling breast cancer. So that's just one good thing that Macy's is doing this month. The other big thing going on at Macy's is they are having a massive diamond sale. What girl does not like diamonds? I like diamonds. I'm not particularly fancy, but I really actually don't know a single woman who would turn away a diamond. If you go to Macy's right now, there's 55 to 75% off all fine jewelry. This is like their version of like the prime days. So if you are in the market to buy a diamond something for someone you like or someone you love, or if you just want to treat yourself, which I'm a huge fan of, go to Macy's and get the benefit of their diamond sale. And then finally, Macy's is at the beginning of 10 days of glam. So this is online only. So this is only on Macy's.com. God knows I could use the benefit of 10 days of glam. The great thing about 10 days of glam is it's 50% off every daily beauty offer during these 10 days. So you can get new offers, go back to Macy's.com every day. Every day they're going to have something on sale for at least 50% off. And there's new offers. Everything goes through the promo code GLAM10. So now through Wednesday, October 28th, if you go to Macy's.com, you use code GLAM10, you can get 50% off their daily beauty offers. I'm going to try that. I'm going to try to actually just put makeup on for the next 10 days. That might be my objective for my 10 days of glam. But as always, any girl is looking for something to help make her look and feel better, and Macy's has got all of that for you and more. So go to Macy's.com, check out everything, and if you want to do 10 days of glam, go to Macy's.com, 10 days of glam, and help make yourself beautiful. Coley, I doubt, has a whoop. Coley doesn't seem to me to be the most active person at Barstool. He does have vertigo, so I give him a lot of credit for that. And he's also like 6'11", so that just makes things difficult to get up and move around and be active all the time. But you don't have to be a big athlete to benefit from Whoop. I actually did the Whoop CEO's podcast this week, so hopefully that will come out soon. Super smart company. His name is Will Ahmed. He has a great thing going. He started Whoop when he was 21. Everybody basically told him he was an idiot and it wouldn't work. And yet it is totally working. So if you're not familiar with Whoop, it's a 24/7 fitness and recovery tracker. It's been helping us track our sleep, track our stress, and all our day-to-day activities. And the cool thing about Whoop is it helps you get informed on how your body is adapting to whatever it's doing every single day. What I love about Whoop is it helps you train for whatever you're doing. So if you want to get more sleep, Whoop can help you. Frankie Borelli is trying to get more sleep. He's using his Whoop to help him get more sleep. I'm trying to get ready to run for a marathon and doing like a woefully bad job of it. Whoop's helping me understand just how woefully bad a job I am doing. But the great thing about Whoop is we are doing a 5K, I think the beginning of the week after next. So on October 26th, we're doing a 5K with Whoop to support the MD Anderson Cancer Center. And this is to support Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Our donation page is live. So if you head to barstoolsports.com/Whoop, that's WHOOP 5K, Whoop 5K, you can help us raise money for MD Anderson. And if you're in the Nardini Run Club, you can run with me on October 26th. We're going to do a 5K, then we're going to do 13 miles, just that easy. So if you want a great discount on Whoop to get your Whoop, you want to run with us on the 26th, you want to run the Blackout Half with me, go to whoop.com, that's whoop.com, and use code STRAIN, STRAIN, to get 15% off your Whoop. So sleep better, recover faster, train smarter with Whoop.
Even old New York was once New Amsterdam. Why they changed it, I can't say.
People just liked it better that way.
So take me back to Constantinople. No,
you ready to do this thing?
Of course.
All right, I'm so excited about it. Hit me. Welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thank you. Like I do cold opens. I don't know about all the structure and...
Yeah, so you go ahead. Whatever you want to do is fine.
Welcome to the first 4-hour long token CEO, everyone. I'm glad finally. Has anyone yelled at you, interrupted you in the middle of a podcast yet and said, wrapped it up like you did to me on several occasions? That's my first question.
No one has done that to me. Why don't you describe that for the people in the back?
I don't know. I think we were like downstairs once. I think we even had like Arian Foster and you were like, is this going to be another one of your 3.5-hour? Like back when we had one radio station and one podcast room, I sometimes had to either record in your/our office or in the second floor, like lounge beanbag room.
You remember when you got, so just to give people some perspective. So we were all shoved into this like very small office that was not made. I think Dave and I thought that one recording studio and one control room, which was this approximate size of like a hall closet, was going to suffice to build our media network. So we opened, there was about 10 times the real estate allocated to the bar, which was never functional and no one ever used. Okay.
No.
So Coley, you and Tyler used to have your podcast, but you did it in like a glassed door conference room where we put two couches and then you guys would have like the mics and you'd be lounging. Like no one has good posture at Barstool Sports. Just
no.
Terrible posture. Bad core. So everybody's like lounged around. Like I always think of like, if I think about you podcasting or Kevin and Feidelberg, I always just picture them kind of semi prone.
Right. Yeah, it looks like a teenage girl's like slumber party. Like we're all on the floor, we got our feet up. There's a box of chocolates we're all sharing. It's a lovely experience.
Everyone's in their socks. Anyway, so you guys used to take over the conference room to record your podcast. And it was your turn to go in, and I would walk down and I would see you sitting there, I would be like, fuck, I'm not going to get, that conference room is not going to be available for the rest of the working day.
Correct.
And then sometimes I took the liberty to tell you that.
Listen, the audience always loved hearing you poke in. And they would fill up your mentions when you tell us to knock it off and cut it short.
They did. They did. And then when I challenged your ad reads, I got a lot of blowback on that.
Yeah. And I was listening to your ad reads from the last one, the Macy's one. A little uninspired.
Feedback taken.
But one thing, I tried to do some research for this, which is a thing I've never done for an interview. There is a sparse, like, why don't you have your own Wikipedia page yet? That's something that needs to be addressed.
I don't know. All right, we'll get on that. Does Dave have a Wikipedia page?
I would assume so. I didn't check. I wasn't interviewing him today.
I will get on that, Coley. Maybe you could write it. That would be
something. Okay.
Wait, so I have one for you. I want to tell the story of our first business meeting that we went to. Do you remember the business meeting I took you to?
It has to be the MLB.
It has to be. Yeah. Do you want to start or do you want me to start?
Yeah, sure. I mean, your whole story is, I'm just a guy from the town in that story. So I'll flesh it out a little bit.
Jeez, what the fuck is it with you guys in Charlestown? Don't they teach you how to read? Come on, let's go. There's things here. Read them.
This shit, it doesn't sound...
I'm not asking. It's not a choice. I'm not asking you. I'm telling you. Read the page,
I'm trying to
please.
Make the shit sound fucking authenticious. You got it all fucked up.
Authen what?
Yeah, you kind of took a liking to me early for reasons I still don't completely understand, but appreciate. And I remember you asked me if I wanted to go over to the MLB because we were trying to work on licensing issues because they kept dinging us for using their highlights on Twitter. I think Big Cat was constantly on the brink of being suspended.
Yeah.
So you brought me and Gaz over there. I remember it was a day I was wearing, I believe it was Big Cat's soccer team's jumpsuit. And it was one of the, yeah, it was red and blue.
Yeah.
One of the rare days I wasn't wearing a hat, too, and I still had my long, disgusting hair. And I just got a salad from Sweetgreen that I now knew I had to take with us. And so there was like a two levels to this meeting. And the first one, I can't remember who it was. I'm bad at remembering people. I only meet like once or twice his name. I need you to teach me how to get better at that.
We go into the first meeting.
Yeah, we go into the first one, and I was allowed to talk in this one. I was shocked, but I took the opportunity, and I told them that it was disgraceful that Brandon Jennings, who's like the 300th most notable NBA player at the time, was more famous than Mike Trout. And every time you went back there, they were like, where's that Brandon Jennings kid?
Okay, so we go to this meeting. I think we took a cab. We took a taxi.
Yeah.
It was, I'm fairly sure it was both the first business meeting for you and for Paul, for Gas.
Probably.
Yep. You had your sweatsuit on and then a very expensive backpack, as I recall. And for people who don't know what Coley looks like, Coley, you're 5'5"? Yep. 6'5", kind of semi-bald. Is that fair? With some stringy hair back then. Gaz was totally bald. I don't know if Gaz had a... I don't think Gaz wore a hat because I think Gaz felt he should, like, zhuzh it up for the meeting. So we go there, two thick Massachusetts accents. It was the first time Barstool Sports probably had had a legitimate business meeting of this ilk anyways. So right. You know that they were, like, high on high alert at, like, Chelsea Market, like, the security was out. People were like hiding shit from their desks, like thinking that we would come in and steal
it. Yeah, just start knocking it off. Yeah.
So we get into this meeting and you're going off on how stupid MLB social is and basically why this guy, you know, why no one's recognizable and you can't build stars and this, that, and the other thing. Gaz is like backpedaling on why we'd use clips illegally, blah, 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 blah. And we get through that meeting and they're just, I think everyone at MLB had a blue button down shirt on and jeans. You know what I mean?
Correct.
Like real, probably, no, not even jeans, slacks.
Yeah.
And then we got a meeting with Bob Bowman. So we had a bigger meeting and we were talking about what we could do together. And then I'm not doing a good job of dismounting this story, but it was just epic. Literally, like all the MLB people are staring at us. Half hate Barstool Sports vehemently. Half were like, "Oh God, I hope these guys don't beat me up like when I go to get lunch later." And then there were some stoolies in there
who were like,
"We could do something." I will never forget that meeting though.
Like the thing I didn't realize was like how big of a deal Bob Bowman was in that meeting because I kept talking back to him and like afterwards everyone, like when he left the room, everyone was like, no one's ever spoken to him like that before. He tried to tell me Aaron Rodgers was going to beat the Patriots that year in the Super Bowl. Like I just laughed in his face. Like, well, and he was wrong. And I still haven't gotten an apology.
Well, maybe you'll get one now.
Maybe. But I think this segues to actually one of my questions that I wrote down. Has anything happened behind the scenes or even very publicly since you've joined Barstool where you thought to yourself, like, maybe this was a giant mistake?
The whole thing of coming was a giant mistake?
Yeah.
No, I was so in. When I came, I knew that I couldn't be half in. Do you know what I mean? Like, right. So I had to... I would actually say the first, like, 2 weeks, I was like, oh, boy. Like, I think I signed my offer. I think I signed, like, officially, and then I went out to dinner with Dave and Big Cat and Kevin and Keith, and maybe Gaz was there. Gaz wasn't there. And they were all, like, fighting with one another. And then, like, I really got a look under the hood. At that point, I was a little bit like, yikes. What have I done? Like, I was like, what's the content strategy? And it was like Riggs wanting to go to London and like Clem was following Porzingis. You know what I mean? And I was just like, what are we doing here? And then the Emily Austin thing happened.
Right.
The day I signed. So I was like, oh boy. But nothing since then, because I also felt like once I got here and then met all of you and then we started to make things together and everyone was just so in on trying stuff and doing stuff and so ready. And it was like, you know, Dave wasn't the most organized when I came into it. So it was like, I didn't even know you existed until like,
you sure didn't.
Didn't know you existed. Then it was like, oh, we got to get Coley down. So every week it was like, got to get this guy here. Got to get this guy here. Got to get this guy here. So it was always someone new who was so fired up to be called into the majors, you know?
Yeah.
So it felt, in the beginning, it felt very fresh and new, and we were so small back then compared to now. Like, like we didn't have much. So you guys got here, and it was kind of like, all right, well, we gotta work, we gotta hustle to make things happen. So definitely far simpler times. But no, there hasn't been anything that I've been like, oof. At this point, I'm so in with it that it doesn't.
Right, for sure.
It's implausible.
Yeah, I forgot I was not part of the New York move at first, and then
there was like 9 or 10 people that were going to come down. Like it was maybe more, maybe 15, but no more than that.
Yeah, yeah, it was very funny when you found out, like when Dave was asking if I could be paid the wage that I would require to live and operate in New York. You were like, "Well, what does he do?" And he was like, "Well, he runs all our social accounts." And you're like, "You didn't think this guy needed to be here?"
Who knew?
How
would you describe the ride in the last 4 years?
I mean, before that, like I like I said in my blog, I never even saw, like I did have a question about Foresight, which I think is interesting, but because like I always saw Barstool as being big, but I never saw the moon, as we always say, like back in the day. But once it came in New York, like the growth, especially being inside of it, it's hard to even see the growth because everyone, we're a team, but it's a kind of a team of individuals. And I don't mean that in a negative way, but everyone kind of has their head down and they're focused on them and their projects that they have going on. And you look up and you see 5 people who weren't there last week who have a full-time job now. So the growth is incredible to see, even just the recognition we get in different pockets and different areas, but the growth of the physical growth of the company, you definitely, like, I don't know if you can even notice it until the Christmas party every year.
Completely. The Christmas party is a great barometer of like, Jesus, this thing got, the Christmas party is so overwhelming.
Yeah.
You like the Christmas party?
I've only been to one. Last year I went, and I had already moved back at that point, so I was just down for that whole week. The year before, I was sick that week, and I felt better that day, but I thought it was bullshit if I stayed home sick the previous 4 days to then be like at the party living it up.
Yeah, that's smart.
And then I have no idea what happened the year before.
I mean, the year before, we were probably playing like cornhole with Smitty in the like office with garbage cans. Yeah, no, I think it's weird. It's crazy when you, first of all, you see how many people work here, which I don't think we even feel as big as we are, kind of to your point, like everybody does their thing. And in some ways, I think that that's bad. I think I could do a better job communicating and like connecting people and keeping us all connected. But in other ways, I think it's pretty great because people are really focused on the right things. It's like,
right.
you get to big companies, or I think companies lose their way when everybody is looking at everybody else inside of the company instead of really focused on like who they are, what their brand is. Like, I don't think Alex Cooper is made better necessarily by understanding what you're doing or what Foreplay right. doing. Now, that said, there are things that we're doing on Foreplay or things we're doing with Section 10, which is your show, you know, with Jared, or Starting Nine that we're doing. Like, there's things that we're doing across the board, which we can better apply everywhere else, I think. But I don't mind that we have a lot of, like, narcissistic, focused, competitive people.
No, I think it pushes everyone. Yeah. And I think it pushes, in turn, pushes the entire company. Do you got your degree in sociology? Is that true, or just something I read on the internet?
That's true.
How has that helped? Like, how has your understanding of like people helped you?
That's a good question. What was your degree in?
I dropped out. And then I got my degree in cultivating marijuana from the Northeastern Institute of Cannabis.
Excellent. Sociology degree. I think... Well, one, I like to read and I like to write. So I thought that government was like too easy of a major, and like, what the fuck is a government major?
Right.
I don't even know if that exists anymore.
Poli-sci.
Poli-sci, yeah. That yeah. seems to be like the rocks for jocks way out of a position, basically. I really liked sociology because it's the study of people and groups and culture and dynamics. Like, I read this really, I had a really influential professor when I was at Colby, this guy named Tom Morioni, and he like really made me think. He was like, you know, you should live once in your life abroad. You should live once in your life in New York City. And like, I've felt those have been like very big things for me, which is I wanted to go do both those things. But in terms of the degree, you know, I think there's a, you know, you understand the impact of technology, you understand the impact of the economy, you understand, it helps create a context for what people are doing as it relates to other big, crazy macro factors. I liked that. And then I also felt like it was a good, I always liked brands. Like, I liked brands. I always liked things. So it like, you know, how do you get, why do people do what they do? Why do they want what they want? Why do they want what they don't need? Like, how does that all work? Like, I remember we had this book that we read called The McDonaldization of America. And, you know, just the Mick everything, the supersizing of everything, which was such a trend. And then, you know, even back then, I graduated from college in the late 90s. So, you know, even back then, the impact of technology, like it was so theoretical for what's mm-hmm. happening right now, which is reality of the alienation of technology, like how people spend less and less and less time interacting and more and more and more things become personalized. You only kind of see yourself. But I liked thinking about those things. And it was, you know, I sure as hell like wasn't going to be an econ major. So
when you were in that stage of your life, though, did you always see like CEO or what were you like angling for at that point? Or what did you think you were going to become?
For a job, to be honest with you. Like I agree. You know, I always loved advertising. I wanted to work, and advertising isn't what it was. I think advertising, I used to watch this show called 30 something. Like 30 something was like my dream show. It was like the kind of the story of these two guys in an ad agency. It was like a drama show. It was great. But I always wanted to work in advertising or in marketing. And I felt like this was my best chance to get there. But I didn't even, my first job was, you know, to be a lawyer. So it wasn't, I just wanted a job, to be honest with you. I wanted to live in a city. I didn't want to go home. And I wanted to pay off my debts and be able to live and like go out occasionally and buy an outfit. Like that's really what I want in a city. That's all I want. So I wasn't one of those people. Like I remember going to like there are all these job fairs when I graduated school. And, you know, I remember going to one of them and I had to stay, it was in New York City, and I had to stay with like my teammate's dad in Greenwich. And I was like, I knew nothing about anything. I had to take the trained with him into New York City. It was like one of the most horrifying experiences ever. I'm sure he was like, get this kid away from me. But everyone had a newspaper on the train. Like that was one thing, is you would go on the train and it was just newspaper, newspaper, newspaper. But anyways, I didn't have a suit. Like there were my classmates in college would be like, have a checkboard and a list and two suits, and they were prepping for this stuff and they knew exactly what they wanted. And I wasn't like that.
So you've been a more take life as it comes to you rather than,
let's figure this out. Like, I'm more interested in like, am I learning something? Am I able to build something? Am I happy? Am I feeling fulfilled? Is this somewhat creative? Like, can I make something of it? Like, I'm interested in that. I wasn't ever interested in like, I'm going to have this job and then this job and then this job for 2 years and then this job. Like I didn't have, my career isn't like that. I didn't have a linear career of like this, right, to this. I was kind of all around, which I think ultimately helped me. How would you describe your career?
I always wanted to write and entertain. And the weird part of being a security guard is it taught me how to get ideas across in a much shorter way. Now, the actual securing, the job I was paid to do, didn't help with that. However, since it's such a boring and dull job, like I was a security guard in like apartment buildings in like Austin, like people were paying like $4,000 a month just to have me sit there not actually doing anything. It was more the aesthetic of it than practicality of it.
Large, so I was on thug outside building kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. I did get to threaten someone from BC once, which I appreciated, but that's a different story. But I was on Twitter for 12 hours a day because that was the only way to, I felt like I was in timeout and the only way to pass the time was to make jokes online with people. And like, I've always been long-winded. It's the Irish in me. Like I'll just keep talking. And when Dave still doesn't know if I'm a good writer, despite the position he's named me to. When I was an intern in 2011 and I was trying to get blogs posted, like back then, if you were writing more than 300 words, like get shit or get off the pot. Like, what are you doing? And I had no idea how to get to my point that quickly. So Twitter really genuinely helped me. By the time Gaz reached out and put me in competition with someone to go for the social media job, I was prepared for that. And then when it came time to start writing these short 3-sentence blogs that K Marco gave me the ability to write, I wouldn't have been able to do that 10 years prior. But since I got to Barstool full time, I think it's been pretty relatively linear growth throughout the company.
Do you think if you hadn't been a security guard and had all that time on Twitter that any of this would have happened?
I think it was a combination of me being on Twitter and a combination of Dave mostly Gaz realizing that they needed to build social brands, that was going to be important moving forward. Because like I said, I got my blood clots in February, and then I was like, I need to figure out I thought I was going to die. I was like, I need to figure out my goddamn life. Like I felt like I was just wasting my 20s and just punting. I always knew I had potential, and I kind of felt bad for myself. And I got this really cynical view of the world. Like, why isn't anyone reaching out to me and just handing me something? And that I took a genuine look in the mirror and was like, no one's just going to do that for no fucking, like, you got to go grab it. And that's when I looked up Oaksterdam University, which is the world's first, it's like the Harvard of marijuana colleges. It's out in Oakland. As you may or may not know, that's where like all of the marijuana legalization started in this country back in the 90s. So I was going to uproot and move to Oakland to go to school there. And through my Google searches, found out that they had just opened their first sister school down the street in Newton. Natick. So I was like, don't have to move across the country, can still do what I wanted. So even if Gaz didn't reach out, I wouldn't be writing, but my life would be in a better place by doing that career. Like
where was this?
This was 5, 6 years ago.
So you got to a point 5 years ago where you're like, all right, this is not going anywhere, and you had spent a period of time thinking it was going to be handed to you, or
yeah,
bitter that it hadn't been handed to you, and then you're like, all right, I'm going to get my shit together and do something, and you thought that would be going to cannabis school. Ends up it was coming to Barstool Sports.
Right.
You still liked the cannabis when you came to Barstool Sports. Do you remember when your drug dealer showed up?
I mean, that feels like a somewhat unfair way to phrase it. I was helping out everyone in the office through the service, the underground service, which I will not name here and now, Officer Nardini.
I remember the elevator doors open up and this man shows up with a large bag / box, and he was an extremely scary looking gentleman.
No, he was like 5'4". What are you talking about?
He was not. And literally I was like, at that point I was so watchful because one, I was still trying to recognize who you guys were. And so everyone knew who came in. I was like, shit, do they work here? Are we supposed to know them? Crazy fans weren't showing up yet. Like the news weren't showing up yet. But I remember him going into the podcast studio and me coming out and I'm like, who the fuck is that? Like, who is that? Made him leave. And then I was like, he will not be coming back here again.
Listen, little do you know, he was back, through me, but that's the thing. It was never the same person. They got a really good system going on in New York up until it finally gets legal, which should have already happened. But that was the only time in my life I feel like I've had foresight when the cannabis industry was mm-hmm. more growing throughout the country. When you worked at Fidelity first, mm-hmm. when you were there, you were like pushing them more online. Is that correct?
Yeah, I always loved the internet. You had foresight about social though too. You shouldn't sell yourself short there.
I guess, but it was more, I mean, even social, like I fell into that ass backwards with Twitter because I had to get Twitter for a class. I was a multimedia class. I was going to be a journalism major. So I got Twitter for a class and I never used it after that. Like you really need someone to teach you how to use Twitter to enjoy it. Yeah. And so I had this account. It was active, but I was never on it. And then when I was an intern at Barstool, I got suspended by Zuckerberg for 3 months because I had been posting smoke shows to the Barstool Facebook page. And like they weren't naked, but Zuckerberg doesn't like any skin, apparently. Mm-hmm. So when I got suspended, I took that very personally and said, I'm never coming back, and went to Twitter full time. So even that, like, it wasn't like me being like, oh yeah, Twitter's the future.
Huh. Are you still bitter at Facebook?
Oh yeah. Especially more now in the role I'm in, since we depend on them so much.
Absolutely. Not big smoke show people, I would agree.
No.
What did your parents say when you were working security and like didn't have a path? Like you're an only child. So what was their, what'd they say?
They didn't talk too much to me about it. Like my father was already starting like sick at that point. My mother was just, she was working, she was taking care of my dad, and she was taking care of her mom who was on her way out too. So it was kind of, like I said, it was kind of purgatory. It wasn't like, my father was upset day one when I dropped out of UMass, but he was always big with mental health with me. And when I was just like, I'm miserable out there, I don't see journalism classes are such a sham. You go to one, they teach you one thing. You go to the next, they teach you the direct opposite. And once my eye was more opened up and I just started really looking around the country at how like traditional news media outlets will claim to be unbiased and that couldn't be further from the truth, and they're just selling lies to move papers. So I was just so depressed and upset out there that I was like, I just got to get home. Like, that's all I need to be. And I got the security job almost. When you're 6'5", it's pretty easy to happen into a security job.
Predisposed to security jobs.
Correct. But yeah, it just felt like time pretty much wasted. And it wasn't a thing that was like addressed or anything. But I know my father was proud when I got this and moved to New York and all that.
Super proud.
Yeah, things seem to be trending in the right direction finally.
All right, so tell me what you're going to do as the EIC.
I mean, mostly get control back to the blog. I want people who want to write. Right now we have a bunch of people who think they have to write or they're going to get fired because they look like they're not doing anything. That doesn't really benefit me. I think the readers can tell when an uninspired piece. I think we have a lot of filler. I want to cut back on that. And I want, like, I think everyone looks at Big Cat and they go, ooh, I want that. I want to be that. They don't look at the road Big Cat took to get to where he is. Big Cat, and I'm sure there are people listening to this, Big Cat was one of the best writers on the internet when he was truly getting after it. And he was so creative, and just any inane thought that crossed his mind, he was going to blog about it and it was going to be funny. He was going to go to the aquarium and pet as many stingrays as possible, and he didn't care what anyone else thought about it. And right now we have too many bloggers that are too reliant on news to get their blogs out rather than, and I do think, like, I get the allure of podcasting and video. Of course I get it, but I also think they're easier. They're easier lifts. They're way easier. Mm-hmm. And I think blogging can help people build their own brand, build their own name. But I don't want these people who just want the end result. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I just want people who want to write. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to make sure that those people get the chance to blog. And it isn't this rat race just to be the fastest. I just want to be the best. We used to be the best place to read, to listen, and to watch. And right now I think we're only doing two of those three.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's great. What's something random that you've been thinking about in the last 24 hours? You want to hear what mine is?
Yeah.
Okay, I have a new thing. I can't stop thinking about it. So it's political season, obviously election year, and every single yard sign for a politician is red, white, or blue.
Yeah.
Okay, I get it. That's America's colors. That's how, like, campaign advertising is done. But if you were trying to stand out and get people's attention, why would you not make, like, a yellow sign?
I think this goes back to, like, so, yeah, I think I guarantee you there's some sort of psychology behind certain colors and what they say.
So, obviously, it's like red tie means power. Like, there's right. Like, I think that all the political parties are using, like, one ad agency somewhere, or like two ad agencies that have come up with, like, six versions of the same font. And they're like, which one do you want? Like, this is the more conservative version of Helvetica for your
right.
Candidate.
Anyways, I mean, do you remember Jeb Bush's? His was just Jeb with an exclamation point. Like, what the fuck was that? Like, yeah. What are you doing?
That was very Jeb Bush, though.
Definitely.
Definitely. That was on brand for Jeb.
And didn't work.
I'm like, if you're driving by something and you want people to pay attention, why do you make your sign look like everybody else?
I guess my question for you would be, since you're way smarter about this than me, there still isn't better advertising than word of mouth. So what, like, why even the signs? Why even as much advertising as they do? Like, why would Biden spend a cent on getting his own political ads on TV when he can just, like, sit back and be like, I'm just going to let people talk and they'll figure it out?
I think that they have to, well, they're very surgical, and I think that they are quite calculated. All of them are quite calculated in what they do. They want to create a feeling that they're bigger than the other or okay. More populated, right? So the yard signs, like, everybody pushes the campaigning into a grassroots level, right? So there's some, like, it would be Jamaica Plain. Like, there's the, like, Jamaica Plain yard sign organizing people, right? Like, that's oh, yeah. How they show support, probably a cheap way to do it. And then it's like any advertising, right? It's like reach and frequency. Now, I agree with you. Why not have a good message and something to stay and stick by it? But I mean, Trump had that with last election. You know, Make America Great was a very, like, people got that. They talked
about it. They sure did.
I'm With Her did not work so well. That was not.
No. No. Yeah, she got more votes.
That's a different podcast. That's true, though.
For sure. For sure.
Wait, so what's the random thing you're thinking about?
Are you familiar with the band They Might Be Giants?
Yes.
So their song, Istanbul or Constantinople, there's about, I would say once a month, where that just plays on a loop in my head nonstop, and that was today.
Huh. Why does it come in there?
It's such a like I'm a big fan of the absurd, and that song being like, I just want to know the entire process behind that song. How did, like, were they just like stoned out of their fucking gourds in the recording studio, and they were just like, oh, we got that show in Constantinople. And someone was like, no, actually it was Istanbul. And then they were like, you know what? This is going to be a great song. And I remember the first time I heard it was on Conan's original late night show. And because he always had those like alternate indie rock guys come out, and they played that, and I was like, what is happening right now? Like, what am I witnessing? And then every once in a while, just that Istanbul and constant, like, it just will not stop playing in my head.
The song was originally written in 1953, Coley. It was written on the 500th anniversary of the fall of Constantinople to the Ottomans.
Okay.
I don't know about this. Oh, They Might Be Giants version. Oh, Wikipedia thinks it might be one of the better versions of it.
Good. Okay. At least I got the better versions in my head.
Better version. Let's see what else. Nothing that great. Doesn't say that they were high out of their gourds when they were writing it. Okay, let's talk about cereal. You had cereal on your list for me.
Did I?
Yep.
Are you sure about that?
Yep. It was in our text chain. What do you think about cereal? I'm not a big cereal.
Oh, that was, yeah, I did. I mean, I love it. I didn't send that in seriousness. Yeah, I don't know. I think, again, that goes back to the absurdity. One thing about the internet, I think everyone knows at this point, is you can find someone to argue about anything. And something as inoffensive as cereal can still really rile people up. And that was one thing we very much enjoyed doing on mixtape. And yeah, I don't know. I've gotten a lot of cereal sent to me. Anytime something new comes out, I get a lot of people who tweeted at me. Why are you
hot takes on cereal?
Yeah, I think Frosted Flakes just got Count Chocula the fuck out of the paint with their new Halloween cereal. I think the count's done out here, Erica. I'm sorry if that ruined your childhood, but they threw a cape and some vampire teeth on Tony the Tiger and just made a substantially better chocolate-based marshmallow cereal.
I wasn't allowed to eat sugar cereal, so I don't think I've ever had Count Chocula.
Listen, I wish I had more of a leash on me when it came to sugar. I'd be Dion right now. I'd be the best athlete at the company.
All right, I love that, Coley. That's so funny. How much do you miss mixtape?
I mean, a ton. Just because it was, I think, very rare to be able to do something like that, get paid for it just with your best friend, travel the country and all that. It was once in a lifetime, and I'll always cherish that time. It always felt like we were cheating the system, being able to do something that fun and free with really, like, I had a lot of people when all that shit went down be like, you could have done that anywhere. You couldn't just do it at Barstool. And I was like, no, we could not have just rambled for 4 hours about nothingness with no outline, no plan. If we had been anywhere else, that would have been an hour show at max. We wouldn't have been able to say half the shit we said. And advertisers and everyone would have been pushing us in directions that we never took it. I mean, we were a basketball show that talked about basketball 12% of the time. Like, that would not have been able to happen anywhere else. So it was an incredible time. I'll always miss it. I'll always love it. But it ended. So it is what it is.
You know what I appreciate, though, is that I worry about that for myself after Barstool. I'm not sure I'll ever love anything like that I've loved this place. I truly right. love it. Because I think you're right. There's things that can only happen here just by virtue of the chemistry and how we do things and the Dave of it all and all of you guys. And I, by that, I mean everybody. Like, I think there's like an alchemy in this thing that is just very, very rare. And I worry that I will never find something else at that point in time or with this energy or that had this much adversity. And I worry, like, what would I find next? Like, I can't even fathom. I'm not going to do anything else for but long story short, but I was really happy to see you came out of nowhere on the editor-in-chief thing. Like, I did not see that coming. And I loved it on so many levels. Like, as someone who's been like such a fan of, I think you're one of the most brilliant people at Barstool. I think that you came forth with such energy and excitement and also conviction about like the blog should be better and this is what it should be like and this is where it could go. And I want to be the guy. I want to do that. Like, I felt so happy to see that.
Yeah.
And I also was really, I was really happy for you because I know Tyler was such a loss to all of us and obviously the company, but also to you specifically that you two are brothers in creating something. And yeah. I don't know, I was really happy to see, oh geez, shit.
Careful.
Running into a lake. I was happy to see that.
Yeah. I mean, when it happened, I remember I was in Maine when everything went down. So I kind of just like threw my phone into the ocean for like a week and a half and just truly thought like, well, what is next? What can I do next? Cause I always knew social's fun and it got me to this point, but it's such a grind. And it's always changing that I truly do believe having young minds involved and handing that off quicker is necessary. But like I said, I always saw myself as a writer and that was the best way I could go about it. But you talk like when NBC came in to try and get us to simulcast radio, I remember radio was just like me, Kevin and Dave and Caleb, but Caleb not really at first. And they interviewed all of us asking like what just about Barstool in general. And they asked me what it was like. And I said, I imagine this place has to be like the early writers' rooms at The Simpsons. And they took that to mean, oh, you think you're The Simpsons? I would never fucking say that. I'm the biggest Simpsons fan on the planet. But it's just more the once-in-a-lifetime-ness of it and the energy of everyone striving to create the best content that they could create. And I don't think that's... I don't think that happens in a planned way. I think it just sort of happens. You get the right people at the right time. And I don't think it could be duplicated elsewhere.
Huh. That's rude that they thought that.
Well, yeah, we didn't get the simulcast, so it's clearly they disagreed.
That was a busy fall. All right, so everybody knows that Coley can go on forever. Coley is the former co-host of Mixtape, which for us, the world's longest podcast. That actually probably not true, but it just felt like that. And they also did, which I had to yell at them often about, like an hour long ad read every time they did the ad read. So we're going to interrupt Coley quickly to just tell you about Ritual. I love Ritual. I keep it on my desk. I take 2 Ritual daily essential vitamins every day. It makes me feel great. Thing I love about Ritual is I feel like they put the fish oil or vitamin E oil or whatever it is and all the nutrients, they like put it together smartly in one little capsule. So I feel like I'm getting like everything in one bite. The great thing about Ritual is it makes helping take care of yourself very easy. These guys are obsessive. So the Ritual people are crazy. They're obsessed with researching about vitamins for women. And what they believe is they've created a vitamin that can help you feel your best, that can help you get all of the nutrients that you need and that you may not be getting out of your diet. I like Ritual because I can bang out 2 capsules. They don't taste bad. I don't feel sick after I take them. And I feel like I'm doing something good for myself, literally like by popping 2 pills and sitting at my desk. The other great thing about ritual, I don't know about you guys, but I always like take something, like I was big into biotin. I was taking biotin. I was taking, the beginning of COVID, I was taking Stamets, which are like mushroom pills that are supposed to help your immunity. Anyways, long story short, I'll like run out of the bottle and then I never order them again because I forget about it and I'm on to the next thing. But the great thing about ritual is it they have a subscription. So every month or every 6 weeks, you can get a new bottle of your ritual vitamins. You don't have to think about it. You don't have to worry about it. It's like set it and forget it for your health. The great thing about ritual and about taking vitamins in general is they just give your body a boost. They help you be at your best by making sure that your body is getting all of the nutrients it needs to function most optimally. If you go to ritual.com/token, you can start your ritual today. That means you get 10% off your first 3 months only if you go to ritual.com/token. Highly recommend ritual. All right, back to Coley.
For you though, when you go into these meetings, what's like the most common wall you run into? What's the hardest thing you get you to explain to people that just don't get us?
Even to this day, there's a lot of people who don't get us. The hardest thing, the first wall's the hardest wall. I always end up begging, and it's always been like this for me here, is like begging for that first meeting. Like, yeah. Just give me a chance. Like, just give me a chance. Like, please let me earn the chance to put us in the room with you. You know what I mean? That's why us going to the MLB way back when was important. I was like, just, I know you have this perception of who we are. I know you have these notions of what we do. Like, just touch us. And I think that's the great thing about Barstool Sports is that if we grab you, like we keep most everybody we grab. Like if we right. touch you, there's something here for you. It doesn't have to be all of it, but there's certainly something. I think we're so good like that. So the hardest thing for me is that first wall of either we won't engage, period, or we don't want to understand more. And I'm always really bothered by that because I'll meet with anybody pretty much. Like I think it's good to meet with people, even if you have no intention of doing something, but you can learn something. So I think that's also what's hard about bigger companies and more established companies is that they're more interested in each other in what is happening inside versus going after something outside or bringing in insight from the outside. Like I love that about us because we are so social, as in socially distributed, we're on the edge of what everybody else is doing all the time, which keeps this company focused on that, which is the yeah. right thing to focus on versus when you work for a big company, you work for NBC, you're like, wah, 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 politics inside of NBC, like wah, 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 Bravo versus E, like you're so much more myopic. But I also think people who work in big companies like that generally like anonymity. They're a number, they're a cog. Like in the beginning, and even to this day, it's like, I always have to find the person who's going to stick their neck out for Barstool Sports and I'll crush it for them. We'll crush it for them. Like, I'm like, don't worry. We got your back. Like we will murder this, but it's always hard to find that person who's actually interested in that.
Right.
That's what was hard at ESPN, to be honest with you, is that I think there were a lot of people who were big fans of Barstool and of Big Cat and PFT and Van Talk, obviously. But there wasn't anyone who was going to like lay down in the tracks to keep that thing. At NBC, there wasn't anyone who was going to lay down in the tracks to keep a simulcast of radio. Like there just wasn't. And that's okay. Like I actually think everything happens for a reason.
Okay. ESPN's another meeting you brought me to.
Yes. Do you remember that social meeting?
No, I remember going to the U.S. Open.
Oh, I did. That was right. That was fun. We got to sit in a box. It was very fancy.
Sure did. Yeah. And the guy sitting in front of me, I was like, you don't know anyone in these boxes. And they were like, oh yeah, that guy schedules the entire MLS. And I was just like, all right, sure.
No, the NFL. We sat behind the NFL scheduler.
I think it was both. I think they said that, but I think it was both. Yeah.
And we were like, that was funny. I forgot about that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Coley, what else? You got one more question?
Yeah, in these meetings, I have a ton more, but obviously you're not going to do a 3-hour podcast. I think this would be more, well, like funnier to people who we work with. In these meetings, you do all the groundwork to get us to like a final meeting. Dave's great. He built this thing on his own, but he's not as, like, he's not polished. You know what I mean? He's not that kind of business person. So especially early on, what was something he said in one of these meetings where you were like, what are you talking about? Like, has he said anything where the whole room just like stopped?
I actually think Dave's pretty killer in the meeting. Dave's good in the meeting.
Does he become a different person?
He has a little bit of like aw shucks about him in those meetings. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I just started this thing. It was the basement. I was writing. Then I had the Astro van. Like he's very charming in those meetings because he tells the first person story about how he. So I actually was never nervous about Dave saying, Dave and I are good in a meeting together, I think too, because we also bring both sides of it. We make like the whole, I also was never really nervous about you guys either, because I think we just are who we are. You know what I mean? And like you insulting the MLB marketing people saying that they suck at their jobs is kind of what you would expect to hear from someone who's very good at social from Barstool Sports. Like, right. So I don't mind that. I also don't think that in those conversations, I think it's somewhat refreshing. Like the only bad meeting we ever had, like we had a meeting with the ESPN social people right around the Van Talk time. And that was a painful meeting because it was so obvious. I felt like they all thought they were going to get like, if it were in a COVID era, it would be like they would catch COVID from being in the room. Like everyone was like, oh God, don't stay on my clothes. You know what I mean? And they were so afraid. It was just very obvious. Like this isn't going to be a fit regardless. I'm more in a meeting like that. I'd rather the authenticity. It's more when like some business person is like, oh, we should do blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, we will never fucking do that. You know what I mean? It's more the opposite where I'm like, yeah, that'll never fly here.
Right.
So that's my answer. What else you got?
Let's see. All right. Let's just say hypothetically, someone in this conversation was given a new position of power and they've lived their whole life in non-positions of power. What would you, as a person of a position of power, give advice to that other person trying to figure things out on the fly?
Hypothetically.
Yeah.
Hypothetically. All right. So one is there can't be any job that's beneath you.
Okay.
You have to understand your system. You have to understand the lowest job in it and why that job exists and the job above that and the job above that and the job of that. You have to understand how it all works together. And you have to have respect and appreciation for all parts of that system. Because that's a good leader, right? You understand, that's a good coach, right? You understand everybody's strengths and weaknesses individually, but also in the function.
Right.
And then you need to have an opinion, right? Where like, all right, we're going this way. We're going to do it this way. This is our new standard, or this is what we're trying to achieve. And you've got to rally people to do that. The only way to do that, in my opinion, is to understand what's driving all of them. What's driving things for them? Where are their pain points? Why does their job suck? Why does this guy hate that girl? Like, what's the actual dynamic? And then I think you have to be decisive. You have to be like, you can't waver. You need to be like, we're going this way. Now that's not to say you can't screw up and be like, we made a mistake there. If you made a mistake, be honest about it. Like we tried this, it didn't work. We're going to try that now. I think you have to be very convicted in that and you need to communicate it a lot. Like you need to be very, very consistent. I think being consistent in a job is very important.
Yeah.
And you gotta, you know, we have a hard company, hypothetically speaking, for this person where it's very distributed. You've got people writing in Chicago. You've got people writing in Boston. You've got people writing in Ohio. You've got people sometimes writing at HQ. So how do you stay connected with everyone? And how do you get to know them and understand what they're trying to achieve and what their feedback is. Like, you don't, I think one of the other things is people always make the mistake of like, you have to know everything. Like, you don't have to know everything. You need to get really good inputs from people. You have to earn their trust. You have to trust them. You gotta take out the trash. Like, if somebody sucks, it's not that somebody sucks. You suck worse because you let them stay there and suck.
Right.
So it's a reflection of you. So right. Like, there's that dynamic. And then you need to show really have progress. Like, my worry on the blog is that nothing changes, to be honest with you. Like, I think that's what failure is, mm-hmm. is that we don't actually do anything. That would be a shame. Like, that's not what you're here for. That's not what anybody's here for. And I'm really excited about the things I'm already seeing. Is there's a lot of people who want to help you. And,
right.
you know, to K Marco's credit, he's like, let's go. Like, I'm here to help.
Yeah.
You. Like, but also there's tech people to help you. There's, you know, there's systems to help you. Your writers want to help you. I think those are the things that's important. I think it's also important to kind of keep shaking things up.
Yeah. I like, it may not work and I'll live with that, but I can guarantee it won't stay the same. That's a fact. So I don't think that should be a worry.
And it's okay if it doesn't work right away, or
right.
You're just going to keep learning things and implementing them. You know, like, I think that's what's hard, is that I think people sometimes get comfortable and they want the status quo. And I think people who have the best jobs and do the best jobs are the people who are like, okay, let's keep going. Let's keep pushing. Let's look around the next corner of what should we change? Or, like, I'm reading this book called Black Swan, which is, it's awesome. It's essentially like, the notion of a black swan is something comes out of fucking nowhere and like capsizes your business or destroys your market. And it's, how do black swans come to be? How do you see black swans coming ahead of time? Like, COVID, in a lot of ways, a pandemic is a black swan. It was a black swan to so many businesses, so many sectors. So I think that's the other thing, is like, what could happen here? How do we set our course, and then how do you have perspective on what else is happening to bring perspective to that?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause again, as I was saying earlier, in a different sense, but I could see hypothetically this person getting very stuck focusing internally and not seeing what could be coming from the outside. Yeah. So I'm glad you threw that in at the end.
Yeah. You have, this person will have people to help him or her. The other thing is, you can't play down. Look, you have a rowdy team. You have a rowdy team that hasn't had a lot of, that hasn't been connected. There hasn't been that connection. So you got to play up, and you got to get everybody else to play up. You know, like, I think it's easy to get, just be in the swamp of like, bup, 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 you know, like, I don't like this. I like that. Did you see what she did? Did you see what he did? Like, that's all bullshit. Your job, yeah. is to move this thing forward, and you are going to set the tone and the pace for what types of conversations are you guys having? What are the blogs that you're calling out as like really great blogs, and why?
Right.
And keep the play at that level.
Yeah. I've never cared to gossip or any of that. So I'd be shocked if people see find me doing that moving forward. I just genuinely don't give a shit.
Yeah, it's like, you're like, I want to do my work and I want to do it great, and then I want to do something else, you know what I mean?
Right.
And I
right.
think in general we have a place that's like that, but I'm excited. I think it's gonna be great. I think everyone's really excited.
Yeah, I know I'm excited, and the conversations I have had with our smarter people, our analytics people and people like that, make it seem like I'm going to make some slight changes at first that should yield better results. And it's going to look like I did a lot more than I did, which I appreciate.
That's great. Do you have more questions?
Yeah, but I you're a busy woman.
All right, give me your best last question.
All right, let's see. Yeah, I really only have two left. So the better one is...
You can do two, Coley.
All right. All right. Well, what's the most you've hated this company? Like, a person, a thing that we did? What was the one time you were like, what the fuck, guys?
Hmm. I have a lot of those, so it's not. To be fair. I hate us a lot.
Okay.
I get so mad. Like, we do really stupid things all the time. We do not use our brains.
Okay.
We do very stupid things. So I am more like flash mad, where I just get mad.
Yeah.
I get mad when we put ourselves at risk, first and foremost, like stupidly put ourselves at risk. That makes me furious. Actually, that's the thing that makes me furious.
Okay.
Is when I think we have such luxury here of freedom. Like, nobody's checking the 4-hour mixtape before it goes out the door.
Right.
One, because nobody has time to do that. But two, because we trust you to put a good show out the door. And that's a luxury and a privilege. And when people, you know, either on the content side or the business side, don't think and don't protect the brand and the house, like, then I get really mad. So that's when I hate this company. Because we talk about, you know, this is like one of those places where there's certain things that, like, you usually we're pretty good. You only have to say it once. You know, you only have to say it once and then it starts to happen. There are some things that, like, have not just taken us saying once. Like, we've been saying, like, we had a waiver incident last weekend that, like, really pissed me off. Because we've been talking about waivers for 4 years now. I know I have been talking about waivers for 4 years. Like, it's not acceptable that we don't have a good system for wavering. Like, it's just not.
Right.
So that's when I get angry, because then I'm like, what are we doing? Why? If we can't get the, like, first step right, like, and we're trying to sprint and we don't, like, have our shoes tied, that's when I get very mad. That's when I get angry. That's really it that makes me hate this place.
Yeah, you're still angry.
I'm mad. Or, like, not treating our stuff with respect. Like, stuff like that makes me mad. Like, the Yankees guys, when they left the food out, and, you know, the rats were all over it, and the breakfast guys show up at 6 a.m. the next day, and there's, like, food and crap everywhere, and it's just disrespectful. So I don't – the other thing that makes me mad is when people are very disrespectful to other people in the – other parts of the company or other things in the company.
Yeah, just general disrespect's never good.
Yeah, or, like, our equipment room right now is a mess. A mess. Like, it's just a mess. And I'm like, we have hundreds of thousands of dollars of equipment in this equipment room. Like, could we take care of it?
Right.
Like, that's money. That's, so it's like, probably like the shit your mom yells at you about. You know what I mean? Like, it's that kind of thing.
Yeah. The one thing, I mean, you know, Pete, he's not quick to give anyone out a compliment, but he, especially in the old office, used to really appreciate when I'd, like, actually roll up the wires, because my father used to fucking beat me if I didn't, like, roll up the extension cord correctly or something like that. So
put the hose back the right way.
Yeah. So he was like, "Who taught you to do this?" I was like, "I'm Irish Catholic. This has been drilled into me for my entire life."
He always wrap my wires.
Yeah. But I guess the last thing, since you have had such a long career and this is a CEO podcast, like, what was what you believed at the time to be a make or break moment, not at Barstool, just in your general career, and what were, like, the main lessons you took out of that moment, whether it was good or bad, you came out the other side. What did you learn from it?
Okay. That's a good question, Coley. So I was in my early 20s, I guess. And I was working at ad agencies, and, ad agencies were great, but they were also not great. Like, it was, like, minimum wage, a lot of hours, a lot of, like, client demands. I loved it. It was like an apprenticeship. So it was good for me. Like, I learned on the job. I'm a better, like, learn on the job type of person.
Yeah, same.
It was same. I think a lot of people here are learn on the job type people.
Yeah.
Book smart people struggle here, actually, just side note. You can be book smart and learn on the job smart, but if you are just book smart, this place is tough.
Correct.
Because it's not theoretical, that's why. But anyways, so I was working a bunch of ad agencies. I needed a change. I did not like the culture. I had like, there was a lot of sexual harassment. Like it wasn't like, I just was like, I'm out, I'm done. And I got this opportunity to go to Microsoft. And it was a global job. I didn't even go abroad in college. So one of the things like on my list was like, I need to go abroad. Like I didn't do it in college. I should have done it in college. I was scared to do it. I was playing sports. Like I avoided it, but I felt like I needed to do it. And I felt like I was unqualified for this job. I like distinctly remember applying for the job and feeling like I have zero business trying to get this job. Like I'm flat out lying is what I felt like. So Microsoft has like a very rigorous application process and interview process. It's pretty cutthroat. Like if you don't, you interview 8 people. And if the first person says you stink, you don't go on to the second. So it's like, okay. You have to like crush it for 8 hours. So anyways, long story short, ended up getting the job, ended up working abroad. And so I was in Boston, and trying to take on this new job. And it was, you know, it was my first time working at a publisher. I had always worked as a buyer or on the agency side. It was, you know, trying to put together technology, a really big software company, advertiser, like it was trying to put all this stuff together. And I had a team that I kind of inherited who didn't know who I was. Everything was virtual. So I would be in Tokyo once and then go to London the next week. Like it wasn't stationary or static. So it was hard. It was like a really tough learning curve. I learned a lot from it. One was that it's always good to take a job that scares the shit out of you. Like, and you can crush that job. And I think so much changed for me after that job, just by virtue of feeling more confident about what I could do, but also I learned a lot from Microsoft. Like it opened up a whole new world to me that I hadn't been exposed to, but it also taught me a lot of things. Like you have to be able to connect with people and try to get people to do what you are trying to do and have them believe that that's what they want to do. And you have to connect that virtually is tough. Like I think a lot of people in our company are learning this now because Barstool was just an in-person company before I got here. So, and even before COVID, it was just an in-person company. So I learned that. Yeah. Microsoft, I learned how to say no. Microsoft is a massive company and everybody wants you to do everything at any given time, which is why it's hard to get anything done there.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah. So like saying no, like that's no, I'm not going to do that. No, that doesn't make sense. Like that was a big learning for me. I had come from like the say yes world where like,
right.
When you're an advertising or you're an agency, you're like, whatever they want, like get them, find a way to yes. And this was like, learn how to say no. So that was a good thing. And then I think just like how great it can feel when you take nothing and then you put things together to make something can be so rewarding. And it's like the process of doing that is the best thing of all. It's not like when you're finished, it's like the process that matters. And that's really what I love even to this day about Barstool and this job is that like the process of it is what is so electric. It's just like how it all comes together is really amazing. And then I would say the last thing that I learned is to know fairly quickly when things weren't going to work. So like to be like, this isn't going to work. Like we should stop. Because I think the other thing that's hard in jobs is like when you know that it's not going to succeed, but you keep doing it anyways. And I think that's where a lot of people get stuck is like, all right, like going to show up and work on, you know, Quibi. Like, yeah. Like it's not going to work. So for me, it was like, it was a good learning of like, if something's not going to work for whatever reason, call it and move on or pivot, you know? So that was my last learning in that.
Yeah. I think it's important, even just talking about blogs in general, if you're halfway through a blog and you're like, boy, this stinks, don't keep writing the blog.
You don't have to die on the hill of that blog. Like get out of the blog. What are your biggest learnings from Barstool?
Kind of like time management and work-life balance, because the first 3 years, and I know it's something a lot of us struggle with. And
are you saying this with irony or without irony?
No sense. Like before I just randomly went to Puerto Rico, even though I told people, it was like, I would just have my head, like I didn't leave my apartment. If the only time I left my apartment was to go to the office, like I didn't not work for the first 3 years. And then I finally took my head above the water and took a breath and took too big of a breath. And then it was time to figure out, all right, how do I have a life here, succeed here, crush my job, but then also have relationships mm-hmm. and try and start a family and stuff like that. So yeah, it wasn't something I crushed instantly by any stretch, but I think I'm there now. What else have I learned? Like writing, I've been a better writer here, but in terms of negotiating, I'm getting better at negotiating. So you better watch out. My first deal, when I was still a security guard and Dave asked me how much I would need to quit and work full time, I think I was making like $22,000 a year. So I said 40 and I didn't even hit send. And he just said done. And I immediately said fuck, because clearly I could have asked for more. Okay. But I was also still happy because I was not making $20,000 a year anymore.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, what's the biggest thing you've learned from Dave or from anyone here? Like,
I mean, from Dave only because I've seen it longer, truly putting your head down and working your fucking ass off. So just truly being like, no, I need to do. And like, that's why I'm always blogging at 2 in the fucking morning. You know what I mean? It truly, as much as I say work-life balance, this place never shuts off. And when you see that from Dave for forever, and then when you come on board as well, and you're the same way, just always head in your phone or just always working, it's hard to see that and not feel like you have the obligation to do it as well. From you specifically, though, way more than Dave, it's about the balance of when it's time to truly work and get on someone's ass, and then the other time when it's time to be a human being and listen to them and lend more than an ear. Like, there have been more than one times you've sat down with me to discuss my mental health. There's been other times you've had me go to an employee who you thought was struggling to take them behind closed doors. The way you're, because I've never worked in a traditional company outward, and it's hard to call us a traditional company, but these are the, like, I was an umpire, I was a ref, like I didn't have jobs that had bosses, like CEOs and stuff like that. So, I mean, you go online right now, people high up in positions are the most hated in the world. You're all bad people because you have a good job. So when you see that, and everyone's just Mr. Burns in your fucking mind, but then you see you who can definitely be, no, it's work time, what are you guys fucking doing? But then to also be able to switch and be like, you guys are human beings. I know you need more than just a boss breathing down your neck all the time. Sometimes it's time to listen. Sometimes it's time for me to reach out to you. What I wrote in my blog about what you did, stuff like that. Like the human element of your job that I for sure is unique to you and not to all CEOs.
That's nice, Coley. I've learned from you that I always really liked you even from the jump because I could see how smart you were. Like, you're very, very, very sharp, and you've put your intellect together in a way that is so smart and so on it, but yet so just untethered to like, oh, it should be done this way. Like, completely wild almost. I think you came into Barstool wild, not mm-hmm. as like a wild person, but just it like unstructured and unformed. And I think that that's, you know, you're one of our single best people at social because your brain just works in a certain way and it's your way. It's your way, nobody else's way. You couldn't have learned that from someone. You couldn't right. have been taught it. You didn't study it. Like, so I like that that just comes from within you. I also think that you are so confident. Like, I think that you are so so in touch with who you are and what you stand for and what you care about and what's right and what's wrong. And I think that that's, to be able to do that in the middle of everyone fighting inside of our company and everyone going bananas over cereal on Twitter, it, your head about you is, I think, a really great thing. And I'm always, I think you have great perspective that way. And I always take that from you.
Yeah. I mean, that's all my parents. So you can thank them.
All right, Coley. Thanks for this.
Of course. Thank you.
Sorry, it wasn't 4 hours, but this is my longest interview ever. I'll have you know.
I figured it would be, even if it wouldn't be as long as I would like. But yeah, no, thank you. And yeah, I'll see you out there.
All right. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Definitely.
All right. Bye, Deb.
See ya.
Istanbul. Okay, so big thanks to Coley Mick for joining. I'm excited for everything that he is going to do next, and grateful for everything he's done thus far. I love the way Coley's brain works. If you haven't already, subscribe to the podcast, leave us a rating, or give us a review. We take your comments seriously. I'm at EKA Nardini. Token CEO is on Twitter and Instagram. We also have a new Facebook group. I don't know how many people are in our Facebook group yet, but I'm going to check. Our Facebook group is a place where you can join, you can ask questions, you can be connected to other members of the Token CEO group. You can get advice, you can network, you can suggest topics, you can complain. Basically, whatever you want to do, we're doing it in our Facebook group. All right, that's it. So we'll see you back here on Thursday.
So take me back to Constantinople. No, you can't go back to Constantinople. Been a long time gone, Constantinople. Why did Constantinople get the works? That's nobody's business but the Turks. Istanbul.